It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, a new state law will require K through 12 schools to teach Hmong and Asian American history. We'll look at some of that history and how it could show up in classrooms. First, extreme weather comes to Wisconsin all year round, and between heavy snows and thunderstorms, so do power outages. Those outages can cause problems for anyone. But for those enrolled in the federal food assistance program called SNAP, having a fridge full of food go bad often means going hungry. SNAP recipients can get replacement benefits, but the process isn't easy. While the state has plans to simplify it, that won't happen until after the extreme spring and summer weather season. Eddie Costello reports on the bureaucratic obstacles causing that delay.
With 9 grandchildren, food doesn't last long in Lisa Winston's home.
And every day is somebody at the school is somebody. Granny, I'm hungry. Granny, you got something sweet?
The Milwaukee retiree relies on Wisconsin's food share program to stock her kitchen with some of her grandkids' favorite foods, including
macaroni and cheese. They love macaroni and cheese.
But when a winter storm swept across southeast Wisconsin this January, she lost power for over 24 hours, and roughly $200 worth of food in her fridge and freezer spoiled.
And then everybody looking at me, I'm hungry, I'm cold. Me too. You know, I don't know what to say. We just eat peanut butter and jelly because you don't know what's good.
The federal government provides replacement benefits for SNAP households that lose food because of things like power outages. But Sherry Tussler, the CEO of the anti-hunger nonprofit Hunger Task Force, says accessing those funds isn't easy.
So you get finally the replacement form and you're like, oh, I could fill it out if it was a fillable form.
But it's not. And unless the state temporarily allows for signatures over the phone, people either have to sign it in person or print it out, then upload it online, mail it, or
you can fax it to them. How many people you know got a fax machine?
So why can't people just sign it electronically? States need approval from the USDA to accept electronic signatures on replacement forms. And even though Wisconsin got that approval in November 2023, they don't plan on making the option available until October of this year. A spokesperson for the health department says it takes time to change their systems, and they want to make sure no one's benefits are disrupted. But the agency has accepted other forms with electronic signatures for over a decade, and the delay means the online form won't be available until after tornado season.
With climate change, these storms are becoming as detrimental to households as the hurricanes that you'll see in Florida.
Melissa Kandari is the Midwest Regional SNAP Director. She says preparing for extreme weather has become a bigger priority for SNAP agencies in the region. But even once online signatures are available, an even bigger problem will remain. Many recipients just don't know that replacement benefits exist.
This is the case in every state that I've seen, where it's just not widely known.
But Tussler wonders why any form, fillable or not, is necessary after major outages. She says the state can see who lost power and who already spent their food share benefits for the month, and they could use that data to automatically replace people's benefits.
Rather than putting them through some kind of unnatural gauntlet of paperwork.
The USDA does allow states to issue mass replacements. There are strict guidelines, so most states only issue mass replacements during declared disasters. But Wisconsin hasn't issued mass replacement benefits in at least 15 years.
If you got a power outage that blows through, you know, like 10,000 households went without power, it's probably time to trigger it.
An estimated 127,000 SNAP households were potentially affected by January's ice storm, including Lisa Winston's. And despite receiving food assistance for almost a year, she didn't learn about replacement benefits until her friend saw a news report about how Hunger Task Force was helping affected residents.
I'm like, wow, I never know all the sources out here to help people. You know, that's really, really in need.
She spent her last $2 taking the bus to sign the paperwork. But for Winston, it was worth it. About 2 weeks later, she got enough assistance to buy her grandkids fresh food and milk for their mac and cheese. Addie Costello, Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. Governor Evers signed a bill into law on Thursday that will require K through 12 schools in Wisconsin to teach Hmong and Asian American history. Wisconsin already requires some form of Black, Native American, and Hispanic American history in schools. The addition of Hmong and Asian American history comes after a spike in hate crimes against Asian Americans during the height of the pandemic. We're talking about this new requirement to teach Asian and Hmong American history in Wisconsin schools. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this history your history? Are you glad to see it showing up in schools? If you're a teacher, how are you looking at the new guidelines and requirements? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Brenda Yang serves District 19 on the Dane County Board of Supervisors. She's a graduate student at UW-Madison in the School of Education, studying cultural identity and its significance in public schools. Brenda, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here.
This law has been floated a couple times in the past, passed this time around, now signed into law. What's your reaction to it making it past the finish line this time?
You know, this bill was first introduced on the floor in about 2006, so by Representative Shanklin. So the bill has been in existence for almost 20 years. So, and the thing that I find that's incredibly fitting about this is that the person who ended up signing this bill is a former educator. So, and I've always believed that a lot of the solutions to what ails society can be found in education in our public schools. So it's pretty unprecedented, in my opinion.
So from a student perspective, under this new law, what are they going to see through their coursework?
Yeah, you know, I think my understanding of it is there are current laws that already exist in Wisconsin that have mandate to teach Black and Hispanic history. Mm-hmm. So this would just add in the component of Asian American voices to that requirement, and specifically Hmong American narratives. And so how they choose to teach that and implement that is up to each school district and each up to each school and how they want to mandate that specifically in implementation steps or practices.
Can you talk about Hmong American students in particular? They've accounted for the rise overall in Asian American residents here in Wisconsin. How important do you see this kind of education being for them and their school experience?
You know, I think as far as the implications of this bill, I think it's incredibly unprecedented. According to my understanding, there is no bill that exists at this caliber of direct and intentionality in creating visibility for a certain people group, specifically the Hmong community. So this will have huge social impact implications because of its intentionality. There are current state laws out there that have a similar mandate to include the voices of Asian Americans, but not quite as specific as this bill. Even in the state of Minnesota, which has the largest Hmong population, and the state of California, which has the second largest Hmong population, they don't have educational mandates that are this specific. So this is pretty unprecedented. The state of Wisconsin is the third largest Hmong population. And the fact that we are this law passed and is being included in educational curriculum is very significant. And it means a lot to our community. But I think there are larger, more social impact implications than people realize.
Oh, what are some of those wider implications?
Yeah, so in regards to social impact, first, I think it's going to help dispel a lot of myths and stereotypes that exist in Asian American communities, especially that we are a monolith. And so we are not a monolith, and this narrative has actually caused harm and prevented access to specific Asian groups like the Hmong people, because when we are lumped into one category, we all have very unique and complex stories with unique challenges. So this bill will help us to better understand the challenges and nuances that exist to eliminating barriers and creating access for specific communities. Also, it'll open the door for not only Hmong people to feel a sense of belonging, but that we exist and we matter. And it also allow people to process sort of their own cultural and historical identities and how that relates to the larger American historical context in an educational and very public setting.
One unfortunate part of our landscape in the United States right now that may have helped push this bill over the top is, as I mentioned earlier, a rise in reports of hate crimes targeting Asian Americans, largely coming out of the COVID-19 pandemic. Are you watching that? Are you hoping things get better? Can something as simple as talking about Hmong American identity in classrooms help tackle that sort of thing?
I believe that it can, because when you're intentional and you're creating pathways where traditional stories or traditional or different narratives have not existed before, it'll open up for space for those discussions to exist and create a sense of not just belonging for that specific people group, but acceptance of cultural identity in general. And I think Americans, I think the larger problem that we have is we know that we have ignorance. All of us have ignorance, but the problem is we are very apathetic in wanting to learn. So when we create a mandate that requires people to actually open up their understanding of different people groups, that opens up the door to create different spaces that haven't existed before. And so I truly believe that cultural identity is the key to solving a lot of the social issues we see in our society today. Because when we have a firm understanding of where we come from, where our ancestral roots derive from, our cultural traditions and practices, why we practice them, I think this is fundamental to a student's understanding of how they perceive themselves and the world around them, which is also directly connected to the impact of mental health. And research has also shown us that those who have a firm understanding of their cultural identity are more likely to not only advocate for themselves, but for other people groups as well, which will help with creating a more informed and human-centered society. And I think that's the goal.
Brenda Yang is with us. Brenda serves as Dane County Board Supervisor and studies cultural identity in public schools at UW-Madison. We're talking about a new state law that requires some Asian and Hmong American history to be taught in Wisconsin schools. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this law? How much do you think knowledge of this kind of history affects a person's understanding of the people they share the state with? Are you Asian American or Hmong American yourself? Maybe a student? What are your thoughts on this idea? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our talk about a bill Governor Evers signed into law last week that had passed the legislature to require K through 12 schools to teach Hmong and Asian American history. Brenda Yang is with us. She studies cultural identity issues in education at UW-Madison. You could join in at 800-642-1234. If you work in schools, are you already sharing some of these stories? If you're part of the Hmong American community here in Wisconsin, what stories do you want heard and told in schools? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Brenda, you are, I understand, a first-generation Hmong immigrant yourself. You work with community leaders on issues that affect Hmong students in public schools. Can you tell us some about that work and maybe challenges that Hmong students, Hmong American students, face?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I've been doing a lot of work in the community in regards to education specifically. I used to serve on the board for a nonprofit that created a program in Dane County, the Hmong Institute, that created a program called the Hmong Learning Cultural Enrichment Program. And we helped shape that program. It's been in existence for a long time in Dane County. And what we wanted to do with that was to pretty much see if we were able to create an environment where students can study their history, their cultural identity, the foods that that are a part of their ethnic heritage, and also to plant some of the plants and crops that exist in our identity, that creates this sort of holistic kind of all encompassing environment for students from K-4 to eighth grade. And what we've learned from that is that we realize that all of our students who have been in the program, we studied data like 3 years before and 3 years after to see if there has been a significant improvement in learning capacities, assessment scores, attendance. And we noticed that there is significant shift in students who are in that program and their sense of belonging, wanting to go to school, and their sense of understanding who they are, and their sense of learning as well. And also having the confidence to pass tests or, you know, to write in their own sort of kind of unique perspective. So we know and we understand from a psychological perspective that being recognized and valued and seen as worthy has huge psychological implications. And so I think that is similar in this case, but in that when you study cultural identity, it's a little bit more nuanced because there's a lot of that historical component that plays into that, because specifically with Hmong people, our diaspora is very has been in existence for a long, long time. And it was around 300 AD that Hmong people used to live in the northern parts of China, but we were moved by the Chinese rulers at that time. And then we migrated to the southern parts of China. So millions of Hmong people to this day still live in the southern parts of China. But then in addition to that, we migrated to Vietnam and Laos. And then that's how we came to the States, was our involvement in the Vietnam War, also known as the Secret War.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Yes, I just have a question about a comment that was made a few minutes ago in relation to an increase in Asian hate. And how should, you know, schools handle that and educate people that you shouldn't really hate anybody? But when you look at the statistics from the FBI and you look at the crimes, most of the crimes per capita are really perpetrated by people of African-American descent. So how would you, you know, break that down to distill to kids where that hate is coming from, as opposed to making a global statement of Asian hate?
Steve, thanks for the call. I'm looking at the FBI stats. Just in general, hate crimes mostly committed by white people. That's not a surprise. That's most of the population. But Brenda, regardless of that point, I think your hope is that these classes will serve all groups in hoping to prevent anti-Asian hate.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the goal and that's the hope, is not just, but I think it's also important to recognize the nuances of hate that exists within BIPOC groups, right? And I think that, you know, the African-American community and the Asian community actually have a very long history of a conflict that exists in our stories. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge that and to recognize that. And I think to dispel a lot of that, those myths and that hate, we have to do it with education. We have to do it with information. We have to do it with kindness and empathy, obviously, and understanding why people feel that certain way that they do, and helping to inform them and change the way they perceive us, the way they perceive themselves. And I think, to be honest, when people show hate, that's more of a reflection on them more than it is a reflection on that people group per se.
Thanks for that call. Brenda, what are some of the stories you hope people will hear, students, and I guess the rest of us will hear about the Hmong experience coming to the United States? It shares many things in common with many immigrants, but as you were saying earlier, some very unique parts of that story as well.
Yeah, you know, one thing that that I'm finding out in a lot of my studies is that the impact in academia, in higher education, I don't think people talk about that a lot. I think that this bill will actually help shape and influence more people into majoring in Asian American studies, specifically Hmong American history, which I think impacts and shapes career trajectories and employment, eventually maybe even our economy. But currently there are not many scholars who are majoring in Asian American studies, let alone Hmong American studies. And so because of this, there is a huge deficit in historical accuracy and research. And so Hmong American history is so vast, nuanced, and complex that there are facets of it that have yet to be explored. For example, the historical narratives of Hmong Christian voices, no one is capturing that information right now. So incorporating these voices into curricula will help shape the landscape of not just social impact, but also academia and career trajectories, career development in history, sociology, psychology, religion, and many other disciplines as well.
Well, that makes me wonder, since it sounds like the state isn't saying, okay, here's exactly the curriculum to teach. Yeah. If I'm in charge in a school district of figuring out what that curriculum is going to look like, that sounds like a tough job. How do you suggest somebody get started and figure out how to capture this amazing diversity of experiences of Hmong Americans?
Yeah, you know, that is a very tough job because, like I said, there is a lack of scholars in this specific area. I think this will create, help create the economy for that, create sort of this niche for people who want to major in this and look more into this. There are obviously Hmong scholars who exist who are studying the impact of that, like Dr. Yan Shao, who was here at UW, and Dr. Tia at UW-Milwaukee, who's doing wonderful work in this. But like I said, our story is so vast that we need more people. We need more people to get into academia, to study this and the importance of it. And I think it'll start with that. Unfortunately, it's going to, school districts are going to have a hard time in finding data or, you know, facts that are actually historically accurate, because there is yet to create a platform for where scholars who exist, who are experts and are already could have years and years of study in this. And so I think it'll create that. And then the challenge is really to be able to find curriculum that is nuanced and is complex and is holistic understanding of the vast history and the complexities of our identities and where we come from. I hope that answers your question. I know that's
it's a big question. But, yeah. It just our last few moments, just less than half a minute, Brenda, how important is it for students of any background to see at least a little bit their history, their identity reflected in what they're studying?
I think it is significant to be able to go into a classroom and recognize that your history is being taught is the most powerful form of belonging. And creating inclusion. And I think if we want to mirror that in our society, we really have to start with the classroom in our public schools and creating and setting the precedent for the next generation to create spaces where all of us are seen, all of us, our voices are valued, and we are all heard. And I think, like I said, this is unprecedented because this will help to create that possibly. And I, like I said, the implementations of this are yet to still to be discussed, and it's left up to the school district. So there's a lot of autonomy in how they choose to carry this out. So it'd be really interesting to actually study this before and after as well, the implications of this and cultural identity. And what does that?
And we'll leave it there. Thanks to our guest, Brenda Yang. Brenda studies cultural identity in public schools at UW-Madison. Tomorrow on The Morning Show with Kate Archer-Kent, a spring classical music preview. That's tomorrow on The Morning Show.